This is Chastity Pod, an informational resource about our favorite kink, chastity.
We're your hosts. I'm Denai Dumpling.
And I'm Locked Fist Monster.
And we're chastity veterans. In this pod, we talk about all things chastity related.
So if you're cage curious and want to begin locking up,
or a key holder who fantasizes about caging that special someone,
tune into Chastity Pod. So let's get locked and stay locked.
Hi guys, welcome back to Chastity Pod. Today we're being joined by Pup Kibbles. He is a person who's had many years in chastity, also part of the pup community, and he's also our very first guest who is also part of the Nullo community.
Before we introduce him, Denai Dumpling, what have you been up to this past week?
Oh God, what have I been up to this week? Nothing too crazy. I was looking into different cages because I love the look of metal. I love my Cobra from King 3D, but I miss, you know, before Folsom East starts in June, I would love to be sporting a lightweight metal cage.
Will you be joining those of us who have a Prince Albert piercing?
I don't think piercing's going to happen anytime soon. I like the look. I love the look of the cage on Bavarian Boy. I really do. The occlusive one with the urethral plug.
Yeah.
Urethral tube. But I, you know, haven't made the leap yet.
One of us, join us.
I mean, I don't play with myself either way. It's just, I don't pull out either.
You are very good. But still, like the idea of not being able to pull out makes it, in my experience, much hotter. But also,
what's new with you?
Okay, I got two stories for us. So the first is that my long-suffering MacBook that I bought back in 2013 finally died a few days ago on Monday. And I like how your first reaction when it died was, oh my God, did we lose the recording of the episode that we just did? And the answer is no, of course not, because I had put it on Dropbox. Everything's backed up on the cloud.
Did you lose the decades of porn you've stored in that computer?
No, I've also stored that on the cloud. Everything was stored on the cloud. I lost nothing. I might have lost like some saved computer games of like some of the old 90s games I occasionally play, but like, who gives a shit? I don't really need to like... No, but actually, I think like StarCraft, for instance, is also backed up to the cloud. Everything's in the cloud.
Everything's in Steam nowadays.
Yeah, so like, I've lost nothing. I might have lost like a Civilization 2 saved game.
Sid Meier's?
Yes.
No.
I know. Right. So anyways, so I spent like 2-3 days trying to save it, failed. And Thursday I bought a new computer. And I spent all Friday setting it up. And it's the latest and greatest in MacBooks. It is the best MacBook that you can buy these days. And that's when I discovered that MacBooks no longer have USB ports. I haven't bought a new computer in like 10 years. So yes. And our fancy blue Yeti mics, of course, plug in via USB ports. So if the sound quality for this episode on my end is absolute shit, that is why, because I'm shouting into my MacBook instead of talking into my mic.
You sound quite clear.
Okay, well, we'll see how it sounds, and we'll see what our sound editor thinks. So then the second story, and this is going to be an extended rant. I like to play Wednesdays and Saturday evenings because I have gym days on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday mornings, and I don't like to be doing squats when I might be full of lube. So Saturday evening, I had a fisting date lined up. I actually had a fisting date lined up and a potential backup in case the first one failed because I am obsessive like that. And the first one was a guy who I had been talking to, you know, like literally for several weeks. So like we had been exchanging videos, we'd been chatting, we'd been all excited to like, he'd be locked in chastity, I'd be locked in chastity, and we'd just be punching each other's holes, and we were all excited about this. And like we're texting each other like as we're cleaning out and warming up. And I'm like, all right, so he's like, all right, well, I better put away these toys and come over. And I'm like, great, you know, see you soon. And so I have everything prepped here for him. And like I'm in like my sporty, slutty rugby jock uniform, and I've got like my Gatekeeper 93 shoved in me, and I'm waiting for him and waiting for him and waiting for him, and he doesn't show
No.
And like an hour and a half later, I'm texting him being like, so are you almost here or update? And he's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I went for like another round of toy writing and I got lost in the headspace and I was just writing toys for the past hour and a half. And he's like, and now I'm too tired to come over.
That is so rude.
I know. And I'm like, I'm extremely pissed at you. Okay. But I was like, all right, fine. There's this Dom guy who I'd been talking to that day as well. And I had said, like, hey, I've got this date planned, but in case it falls through or whatever, would you be up to play this evening? And he'd be like, oh yeah, I would love to, fuck you and fist you and all this other stuff. And I'm like, great. So, I text him like, ah, the guy flaked. And he's like, great. I can pick you up around, it's 6:30 p.m. at this point. He's like, I can pick you up around 9. And I was like, okay, cool.
Nine. Was
Nine p.m.
that is that okay? 3 hours later?
I mean, so I like do deep and extensive clean outs. So like I'm good for like a good 24 hours later.
Nice.
So it's fine. Right. And I'm like, okay, great. I'll just like be riding some toys and like warming up and giving myself some orgasms until you're available. And he's like, no. I want the first anal orgasm you get from this evening to be with me. So you can play with toys, but you're not allowed to orgasm. And I'm like, look, if I play with toys, I'm going to accidentally orgasm. So I'll just sit here, like do chores around the house and be plugged up until you're ready. Cool. So 3 hours of
Oh
me wandering
no.
around, still with my Gatekeeper 93 in me, by the way. My Gatekeeper 93 at this point's now been in me for like 4 hours straight. My hole is just ready to get fucking wrecked. And I text him shortly after, and I'm like, so what's the deal? He's like, oh my God, sorry. I was like having dinner with a friend, and there was this friend, like who I hadn't seen for a while, and like we're having fun. And I'm like, and I'm gonna have to cancel. And I'm like, you fuck. Like, I have done all of this like prep and clean out, and I'm ready to get fucking wrecked. And I was like, but it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine.
That's not fine.
That's not fine. So like now I'm like thoroughly out of the headspace, but like all of my toys are out and I'm cleaned out and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna try riding toys a little bit and see where that gets me. And I just couldn't get into the headspace of it. Like I was just so out of the headspace that I tried for a little bit, couldn't get anywhere, gave up, made myself a pizza, went to bed. Woke up this morning and I'm at like 8 in the morning and I'm horny and I'm cleaned out and I haven't put any of my toys away. So all of my toys are like still out. And I was like, you know what?
If the table's set, eat.
Exactly. So basically, what I did all morning up until we started recording this podcast around 1 p.m. my time. From literally like 8 in the morning until like noon, I would ride toys for a bit, popper myself up, get a nice anal orgasm, then pause, rest, recuperate, do some chores, practice some Duolingo, do whatever, and then get back into it and do another round. And so that's what I've been doing all morning. And now I'm feeling a lot better than I was last night. But And my cunt is feeling very loose and possibly a little bit drippy. But I am very, very pissed
I
at
mean, these people have not only wronged you, they wronged your hole, and a hole never forgets.
right. I mean, at least they both apologized for flaking, which, I've had worse circumstances where I've gotten all cleaned out and the guy said he was on his way to pick me up. And then out of nowhere, he blocked me on Grindr. I've had that happen to me. And then he had the gall to try and hit me up later.
I mean, but this is, I feel like someone who tells you, you have to stay uncummed, no anal orgasms for 3 hours for me. And this is just someone who isn't, I don't know, someone who you see regularly. I feel like that's very selfish. And cleaning is no small feat.
It's not fun. The request from him was a strong request, and like I am a little bit annoyed by it, but also like it was in the context of like this was going to be a dom sub play evening. Like there was going to be restraints, there was going to be some paddling, like you know, there was
Oh, he's
that
playing into the
was
energy of.
right of like I own you, boy, is the sort of energy that he was giving off. And I was willing to work with that. Anyway, so that's been my week. So Pup Kibbles, who we are about to interview.
Pup Kibbles.
He's a pup. He's a chastity in denial enthusiast. And perhaps most uniquely, he's a member of the Nolo community. He's had gender nullification surgery. So, Denied Dumpling, going into this, what do you know? What preconceived notions do you have about Nolo?
You know, interestingly enough, my first few exposures to castration were in Bara manga, specifically from Gengoro Tagame. But the kind of castration kinks that he drew in his art was very like violence focused. It include things like wartime. It has a lot of fantasy with sometimes with beasts like demons or oni. From hell, cutting off genitalia from big muscular men. So, the fascination with cutting off genitalia for me, from my first exposures from it, it feels like playing in the fantasy of something. I don't want to say, I don't know if it's gory, but something extreme, something very. Extreme. But I do see that in chastity, how so many of us love the idea of emasculation, how we love to play in the idea that we lose something so core in our masculinity or manlyhood, right? And being denied that or ta having that taken away could be hot for many of us.
My experience with castration play and nullification is only tangential, only you know what I've read on
Tangential,
ten
huh?
tangent tangent to tangential, whatever.
Tangential.
Tangential, sure. Yeah, it's only what I've read online. And my first experience with it was when it would crop up in erotic fiction, 10, 15 years ago, as very sort of extreme master slave play, severe body modification play. And it did have a lot of sort of very dark edges to it. But Pup Kibbles online is a light and cheery persona. So like the dark preconceived notions don't really match the appearance of him. So I'm excited to talk with him. I'm curious to hear what he has to say and what his journey has been with Nolo and how that has intersected with his other kinks and with his chastity play. All right. So let's get into it.
Let's dive into it.
Hello and welcome to Chastity Pod. Today we've got a guest, Pup Kibbles, who we're very excited to talk with.
Lockfist, why don't you start with the questions?
Well, first, could you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you get started with the pup community and the kink community and the fisting 5, 6 years ago?
Tumblr and XTube, I think, is kind of the common answer for that I use. Just started experimenting shortly after I graduated college, moved out on my own, and just started looking things up. I was like, ooh, I like that, I like that, I really like that. Started playing around in the pup community and finding my pup identity of Pup Kibbles. And ironically, the Pup Kibbles name came from a high school nickname that I picked up while I was running cross country, and it just kind of stuck and it worked. And has I kind of essentially had been trained for it, trained to answer to it for years. And kind of built my pup persona around that. And then that led into to fisting and chastity and the intersection of those two. Again, watching Tumblr and XTube, but RIP to them. But luckily I found Twitter shortly thereafter and started posting and interacting with individuals and others in the community. And that's actually how I found my handler and trainer was through Twitter. And
your history with Chastity and with the Nolo community.
I played off and on with Chastity a couple weeks here and there, a couple days here and there. But it really wasn't until the pandemic hit that I did long-term Chastity with my handler and trainer. So I was locked for about 690 some days prior to nullification surgery in March of 2022. Pretty much was locked pretty much till the day of surgery. And then I would say kind of entered permanent chastity, I should say, on March 8th of last year. So I'm about a year post-op. And for those that don't know, Nulo or gender nullification is essentially a individual that has their front genitalia removed and sewn smooth. So think of like a Ken or Barbie doll. All they really have left is like a little urethra tube to pee and whatnot. And
was chastity something that you suggested, or was it something that your handler suggested?
It was something that I had suggested because I had this like little inkling in the back of my brain that was like, hey, this seems right. And then as soon as I started wearing chastity, my desire to wreck my butt started to incline about 150%, which just led to some ungodly things during the pandemic.
Only 150%? Sure.
The sky's probably the limit on what my brain was thinking during that time period.
You said ungodly things.
Yes. And by what ungodly I mean is just the sheer amount of toys I purchased during the pandemic that led to bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger toys just several times a day, days on end. increasing from just like your regular dildo to some of Top Toys' biggest
Where are you now with the Top Toys lineup?
Well, so that's an interesting question because pre-surgery, I was about the 100, the grip 160, grip 170, which is their biggest.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah.
Toy really didn't have to have any warm up. I could just spit on the thing and sit on it. Post-surgery, I'm a little bit farther back now. I'm about the grip 144, 150. But that's just due to recovery from surgery. That was probably about 6 to 8 weeks of like no toy play at all. And then probably another 2 to 3 months of trying to train back up to that. I had destroyed my butt enough pre-surgery that there wasn't much of a ledge to get back over. So, slowly getting back up to it. And hopefully here in the next couple of days that will grow even farther as I head to Fist Fest.
Very fun.
Yes.
So this is a personal question I've had for a while. Yeah. There's a huge intersection between pups and chastity. And I've always had questions about regarding what brings, I'm sure there's a plethora of reasons. But what comes first in terms of like the desire to be a submissive pup and therefore a good boy doesn't play with himself, or is it another reason? I've just always wondered.
I think as you said, there's a variety of reasons and it really depends on the person. For me as a submissive or a verse submissive type person, it's a really a headspace switch for me. Or it was, as soon as I put my cage on, I could just feel it in my head that like, hey, I'm in submissive mode. I'm in sub mode now. So it would help me mentally prepare for those scenes. And also just my pup persona as being kind of happy go lucky. It helped settle me down for those scenes as well, just kind of help relax me out. Regular fisting scene that I would go over for a hookup, it helped me focus and relax internally to help take fists and things like that.
Had you done like dom sub scenes before you got into pup play, or was pup play your entry into kink?
Pup play was my entry into kink. Because when I graduated from college, I moved out to rural upstate New York, which there's not much of a scene up there. So kind of pup play helped bridge that gap until I had some more type dom submissive play scenes and started really getting in the community and traveling to events for those type of interactions.
And then when did you first come across the nullification community, and when did it first enter your mind that like this might be something you were going to explore or be curious about exploring?
Yeah, so I'd seen clips here and there again on Tumblr and X2 and really didn't know what it was, but knew something felt right about it. So that was about 2 years ago. So about a year and a half prior to my surgery, which again, that process leading up to surgery took that full year and a half with visits and doctors and things like that. But I really found the NOLO community on Twitter, and said, hey, that's something that seems right. I've kind of always had body dysmorphia when it concerned my front genitalia, or front stuff, as I like to call it sometimes. And so I started reaching out to those individuals at their pages I came across, and said, hey, what is this? How do you go about it? Things like that. And they kind of really embraced new entrants into the community and kind of reached out and said, hey, these are who you should be talking to. This is what it's called officially. Started talking to my GP about it, my new therapist, kind of started going down that route. So it was actually a really quick turnaround from when I found the NOLO community to when I had surgery, which was really, as I said, about a year and a half.
That is rapid. I remember coming across like nipple piercings and PA piercings and poured when I was like 18. And yeah. Like, I didn't get my PA pierced until I was 25.
Yeah.
So, and that's a much less severe jump.
Yeah, it was kind of, as soon as I started finding individuals in the NOLO community, I found that like this, and this is all the time while I'm locked as well too. So like my horniness is just like through the roof,
right.
which probably didn't help, but also helped confirm it at the same time. Because really when I started wearing chastity, I was having severe body dysmorphia issues with my front stuff and my front genitalia.
Continue on.
Go ahead.
Do you mind if we ask a little bit about what that front stuff body dysmorphia was like? Like when did you first feel I'm going to guess
disconnected is a good word I use sometimes too. So it really started actually at a much younger age, probably when I was in middle school, high school, grade school, just really never mentally connected with my front stuff, my front genitalia, to the point really where in high school, college, and shortly post-college, I really didn't play with my dick and my balls. I didn't really jerk off. So it was kind of, I knew I was disconnected and had body dysmorphia, but really was never talked to anybody about it. Didn't know what to do because I just didn't know what it was. I didn't know what NULOs were. I didn't know what gender nullification was, or eunuchs, or being castrated, or the variety of combinations of those three or four procedures were, until I kind of got on Twitter and just started, kind of happened upon it.
Yeah. And can you walk us through what those different procedures are and what those different technical terms are? So what is the official name for the surgery?
So my official surgery, Well, there's the what my doctor used, which is, or the more generic term is called gender nullification. Okay. So that's where the penis and the testicles and the scrotal sac is removed. My doctor basically it submitted to the insurance company that I was having zero depth vaginoplasty. Just because, again, the trans medicine right now is under such of attack. So it's, luckily, depending on your doctor, they are really good about trying to get things classified and the medical necessity for nullification surgery or vaginoplasty, things like that. The subs, the steps you could lead up to gender nullification include becoming a eunuch, which is essentially your scrotal sac and your testicles are removed. It's called an orchiectomy. Or the kind of the eunuch is kind of like the NULO term for them. Mm-hmm. Or some people use the term castrated. And then there's individuals that I have seen as well. I've not met them in person where they have their penis removed, but not their testicles and scrotal sac, removed. Generally with that, it depends on your surgeon. Some of them, your urethral tube is rerouted to the backside of, your testicles so you can sit to pee. Or I've seen one where they just literally had their penis removed and the urethral tube is still out the front. So it depends on, again, it's everybody's preference on how they have their surgeries or what combinations or steps. I had all mine done at once. Some have their testicles and their scrotal sac removed and just are a eunuch or castrated. And then they move on to nullification several years later. I've seen a wide variety of individuals do. Some it takes years, some it takes months, and things like that. So,
now with chastity play, with long-term lockups, for me at least, being locked up leads to just increasing horniness and then like plateaus of horniness.
Yes.
With nullification, has that been your experience as well? That are you like having experienced both chastity and nullification? Yeah. Is it similar sort of psychologically to being locked up? Is it similar in the sort of horniness levels?
Yeah, I would think so. That's at least been my experience, is that there's been several times over the last couple months where it's just like, or even over the last year, I should say, where I'm just like a mare in heat for like weeks on end. And my handler is like, I can't deal with you right now because you are so horny. Go sit on your toys, go get loads, be done with it. But it's definitely, it's 70% psychological for me and about 30% on how my body absorbs my testosterone for the week. Mm-hmm. Because since I had my testicles removed, I have to be on replacement testosterone on weekly shots. So there's some times where I can feel that like, hey, this is very mental horniness and this is my body just didn't want to absorb all the testosterone this week. For me, chastity was a very good gateway into my nullification because it helped reinforce like, hey, this is the right decision for me and for my body and for my mental health. And that was the same way prior to chastity, is like having that denial of like, I can't release, I can't touch myself in the front, kind of added to and helped my dysmorphia overall. So kind of chastity almost saved me mentally, especially during the pandemic, until I was able to have my surgery. So like post-surgery, I still look back on those days of like, hey, this was the right decision to be locked up permanently for 690 some days, helped me get the surgery. And then I still carry some of those same traits that I learned in Chastity of denial and controlling your urges and butt wreckage.
It sounds like for me, that the whole body dysmorphia you felt prior was corrected by, was confirmed by Chastity and then corrected later by your surgery. Yeah. And so for you, this was much more than just aesthetic ideals. This was really like a body preference that you didn't want any more of your front stuff.
Yes, correct. Right. Very, very, very much so.
So you mentioned you had a handler. Excuse me. You mentioned you had a handler. Is he the same handler that had you at the very beginning of the pandemic?
Yes. Yep. Yep. So okay. Handler, cute Chai Town Boy on Twitter.
Right.
Is my handler. Yeah. So we met early 2018. And he's kind of been my handler ever since. We see each other several times a year. We talk every day, chat. And he really helped with my Chastity experience and my butt wreckage.
It sounds like so he must have been a supportive person. Yeah.
Yes.
This was a huge decision for you. And of course, as your handler, as someone who's your primary compliment partner, I'm sure you went through a lot of conversations with him regarding your desires, how you would have felt in change. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So we approached long-term Chastity again, as I said, prior to the pandemic. And then once I started going down the new low route, I really started expressing to him like, hey, this is something I'm interested in. This is something that I think I need to have done. And he kind of really helped me coach, saying, hey, you probably should talk to your GP. Really encouraged me to do therapy, which I was required anyway to get letters of support for the insurance company. And just kind of like a sounding board for me of like, hey, this is what I'm feeling. This is how Chastity is going for the day, for the week. Any issues that would pop up around the cage, around my body dysmorphia, he was really there to help kind of just someone to talk to about it.
A first check, a second check, a third check.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yeah. He was kind of, yeah, it was. And then even post-surgery when I was recovering, I was always asking him questions of like, how did it go? Because of course, like those 3 or 4 days, the day of surgery and then 3 or 4 days hours, I was just like out.
I can imagine.
it was, yeah, because the surgery overall is about a 5 to 6 hour procedure.
Wow.
So very in-depth because they're moving things around. They're cutting things off. Yes. I won't spare, I'll spare you the gory details, but yeah. So, and then just following up with him mentally of like, hey, this, so it's done. This is how I'm feeling and things like that. So
now one gory detail question I do have, yes, is do you have any erogenous tissue, erogenous? What's how do you pronounce that word?
Erogenous.
Yes.
Do you have any erogenous tissue still down there? Do you have like a, a clit or something, or like?
That's actually what I call it too, is I call it my clit. So they essentially took all the nerves out of my penis,
mm-hmm,
and shoved them in one little spot in the middle of my crotch.
Interesting.
My surgeon did a little bit different procedure because I wanted it. He saved the glands of my penis, okay, and shoved all the nerves, literally every single nerve that he could take out of my penis, and shoved them behind that and sewed that to the front. So I literally have this pleasure spot that when someone starts licking, touching it, it pushes me over the edge so far that my body does not even know what to do.
Ooh.
And can you orgasm from that? And
yes, I can.
What is that orgasm like?
Much more so much longer, stronger, powerful, and more volume of cum. So I actually still produce cum. Just there's no sperm, things like that.
Yeah.
But it looks and tastes like cum. I think it actually tastes better post-surgery, but that's just my opinion. It has, again, with Chastity, it was on one level because it helps again with my body dysmorphia. And then post-surgery, having orgasms now are 10 times larger, longer, and more powerful than I was pre-surgery. So it's, yeah, it's now, very hard to describe.
Now, your handler, cute Chi-Town boy, he was your key holder when you were in chastity, or?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
Yep.
Do you still do denial play with him? Like, does he say you're not allowed to touch your clit? You're not allowed to play with your clit?
Yes. Very. Okay. We pretty much, so we actually had a 5-page contract. We have a 5-page contract.
Ooh.
that we signed when I started long-term chastity. Mm-hmm. And we've pretty much carried that through till this day. I think actually we need to do a revision and kind of update some things because there's like chastity in it.
So but you've got a bureaucratic kink as well.
Both him and I very much do. Yeah, so yeah, we both very much do have I've never heard it used that way before, but yeah, that's virtually what it is. Very neat, orderly, in line, right. Very explicit. Because there were sometimes I'm like, well, it wasn't written that way, so that's why I did it. And he would make some edits and we both learned to be very explicit and very refined in our wording because. As a puppy, I would always try to find the loopholes.
Puppy borderline brat is the vibe I'm getting.
Oh yeah. I would I would agree with that.
That's playful. That's so fun.
Yeah, so that's kind of how we did it, and we just carried it on through now. So very much denial. Since I don't have a physical cage anymore, we do it as more of a mental. Mental denial, which is fine by me. So
have you thought about getting, like, I know that like they have like chastity clit cages, like, you know, secured with a piercing and like a little cap that covers a clit.
Yeah.
Have you thought about doing that? Have you considered that path?
I've thought about it, but then I look at the attachment, like how to attach it.
Mm.
And I'm like, I don't think a piercer or my doctor would know how to make it work.
Right.
Because I'm at a nudist campground right now, for full disclosure. So that's why I'm not wearing any clothes. But there's no good place. It'd be very hard. The only type of chassis device that would work now is kind of the full belts, the metal belts that you kind of see. But I just don't have the money for those right now.
Right. And those are pretty, but they're also like, I feel like they just get in the way so much. We do actually need to interview someone who's into those and who wears those frequently and find out how they do it.
I've looked at it and I'm just like, I lead enough of an active lifestyle. I just don't know how I could make it exactly work. Yeah. So, but I could probably figure it out.
If there was a magical device that you could lock over your clit, would you go down that route? If that option existed?
I think so. I'd be at least willing to give it a shot, see how it goes. And it may surprise me because I started with my cages. I started with just a very generic holy trainer. I think like everybody starts with, wore it at an event that was completely outside, realized that was way too hot because it's just solid plastic. And then I switched over to Kink 3D. I think like their third or fourth like smallest size, and then just downsized to where I was in a Cherry Keeper innie for about 6 to 8 months prior to my surgery.
I like how easy it is to date someone's chastity journey by what cages they started out with and how their cage choices evolved.
Right. Yes, exactly.
It's like, you know, someone who's like, yeah, so I started off with one of those generic holy trader devices off Amazon. You're like, I know what year you started versus someone who's like, oh yeah, I used a CB6000 or I just got one of those Kink 3D knockoffs off Amazon. You're like, okay,
yeah.
I know where you are on the timeline.
Yeah, I came in with my chastity cages kind of at the tail end of the peak of Holy Trainer.
Right.
Which was like that 2018, 2019, I think phase. And then I think I was one of the early adopters for Kink 3D shortly after they started.
Yeah, because Kink 3D started in 2018 was when he made that Reddit post being like, chastity devices suck. I'm making a new one. Anyone got ideas?
Yeah.
Because I remember when I was suggesting lockups for various boys back in like 2016, 2018 to 2018. Mm-hmm. The Holy Trainer was usually my go-to recommendation.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Although that's now switched. I now recommend just getting whatever cheap knockoff off Amazon that you like the look of that doesn't have a hinged base ring and like, you know, meets a couple standards.
We
have an entire episode where we talk about that.
Yeah. It's just, and then I picked up them when they started selling at Mr. S and mm-hmm. just really started downsizing. I think fairly quickly I downsized maybe every 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Where I got down to their smallest, at least their Kink 3D, their smallest, I think, baby cage.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In pink, which I know some boys are like, I get hit up every once in a while of like, you still have those two pink cages? Like,
do you still have those pink?
Yes, I do. Cages? I have all my chastity cages in like an 8x10 shadow box frame hanging in my playroom.
Ooh, memorabilia. Ooh. Yeah.
That is much more organized than I am about it. I have a pile of chastity cages just sitting in a box right there.
Box of shame, you know.
I live out of cardboard boxes. It's a problem.
So as much as the kink community would love to be inclusive and such, mm-hmm. I would like to know, do you have to feel like you're coming out every time you play with someone new?
To a degree, yes. Because there's certain safety procedures that have to be followed.
Oh.
Just because of the way my body is now. I'm much more susceptible to UTIs. So when I'm in the sling and everything is facing forward, I have to just tell them, hey, that you will see a hole, but you can't finger it. That is my urethra. It goes straight to my bladder. So please don't stick anything in it. You're more than welcome to eat these areas out. You're able to lick these areas. Just don't stick your tongue again into my urethra and just try to watch where the lube goes, and things like that. Where I find it more difficult in the kink community is when I go to the adult video stores or the glory holes, the random hookup cruising spots for individuals, because a lot of times when we're starting to like feel each other up and things like that, they feel the front and it's smooth. So they automatically think I have had, or I am trans, or have had bottom surgery, so they immediately start trying to finger. So that's where I've tried to. That's where the difficulties have lied. But that's just, I think, a product of there's not many individuals that have had the surgery that are in the community, or that are out having hookups, anonymous hookups, things like that.
How big is the NOLO community, and how much of it sort of intersects with the kink community in your experience, and how much of it mm-hmm. is separate from it?
Yeah, so I'll answer that a couple different ways. So the individuals that I know of currently in the kink community / I would say just outside the kink community, because they are kinky people, but they don't interact in the general kink community a lot of the times, but they still identify as bi or gay or agender, things like that. I would say I roughly know 5 to 10 individuals
mm-hmm.
That are I know are in the kink community, that they're in the hot pockets of like San Francisco or New York or things like that. So I'm originally from Ohio, but I live out here in Connecticut now. And I know of there's me and one under individual that are new lows in the entire state.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a very, very small community that is integrated with the kink community. But there is a much larger new low community that my doctor kind of alluded to, as well as some of my friends that are new lows that have their doctors have told them that each of their doctors perform about 3 to 4 surgeries a year, mm-hmm. which anytime we talk about it kind of in our new low group chats are like, that's a lot more than you would think of.
And roughly how many doctors are there doing this?
I know of, I would say about 3 to 4
okay.
across the country.
About 15, 16 of these surgeries a year, roughly.
Yeah. And I roughly guesstimate the surgeries really, really been medically performed for about 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. Okay. I do remember years ago, in like the dark depths of erotic fiction on the internet around like 2010, reading about guys who were like doing at-home castrations.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And that was a bit dark. Yeah.
Yeah. We luckily the access to this now has gotten much better. So I haven't heard of any at home procedures in a few years, which is to me is a great win and a great sentiment to the people are seeking physical medical care to have surgeries and things like that. So
yeah, I remember like 10 years ago, like banding, for those who don't know, is where it's the way they tend to castrate sheep these days. It's where mm-hmm. you have these incredibly tight rubber bands that you put around the testicles and they cut off the blood flow of the testicles, and then like they fall off a couple days later. They die and fall off. Yeah. And I remember and they actually do still sell these like in niche yep. kink shops online. You can get, because some people are into banding as a kink but don't actually want to be castrated, so mm-hmm. they like to like put it on and experience the excruciating pain for like an hour or two and then yeah. take it off. And I guess probably there's some sort of fantasy play there involving like, oh, this time, like I'm actually going to get castrated.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, yeah, it's, I won't go into it too much, but I do work in agriculture. So that is still very much it's a very common practice. For sheep and for cattle and things
for
like
sheep,
that.
For sheep right. and cattle.
Yeah,
yeah, for sheep so, and cattle. Explicitly for sheep and cattle use only.
Right. So medically, there's probably been, if doctors have been doing this for about 5-10 years and averaging about 15 a year, we're mm-hmm. looking at a community of, you know, 75 to 150 NOLOs around the country, mm-hmm. of whom, yep. as far as you know, about 10 of which are sort of in the kink community.
Right, above the ground.
Right.
Yes.
But then there's yep. probably several dozen at least who have done at-home work
yes.
in the preceding decades.
Yes.
Or even possibly still today.
Yes.
Right.
And the coastal cities, you know, we are so much more liberal and open-minded about mm-hmm. trans bodies and then people reclaiming body autonomy, right? And so with the advent of new trans medicine and surgery, mm-hmm. it's really beneficial to get things done professionally, I yes. would say.
Yeah. So the way my progress in it, again, it works different a little bit for everybody and how their health insurance works, is I talked to my GP first. He recommended a therapist that was a mm-hmm. trans LGBT therapist in the state. Mm-hmm. And I was his first new low for both of them, or type of alternative bottom surgery mm-hmm. is another term that people use in the bottom surgery world. But really, to find my actual surgeon, I had to do all the research myself and find gotcha. the doctor that I wanted. I talked to several Kind of did a consult with each of them, and then I ultimately picked Crane Center, and of all states, Texas is where I had my surgery. They are one of the leading trans surgery centers in the country.
I would not have expected it to be in Texas.
Yes. Yeah,
I guess.
Go ahead.
Sorry, my big question really was, I wonder if there was, if they were very open to allowing you to move forward with the surgery and have it covered under insurance without, I don't know how the medical world would classify it, if you were trans, or I don't yeah. know if how
yeah would classify that. Yeah, so luckily again, being in a coastal city or coastal state, finding an LGBT doctor was, I think, my first key step. Is when I moved here in 2018, is I found a Grindr hookup one night, and I literally just asked him at the end of the hookup, like, hey, is there any gay doctors in the state? And they handed me the guy's business card, and I've been seeing him forever since.
The Grindr mafia works again.
Exactly. And I love him to death. He's great. He's also kinky, which is even better, that he literally keeps a calendar in his office of like, hey, this is when IML is, when MAL is, when all the big kinky events are.
Oh my God, incredible.
Yes. And I've gotten on the schedule of like, my prep visits work now is essentially after each of those big events that I go to.
Oh, that is so
do all my screening, all my prep, all.
I did the same thing. I was just at Easter Berlin, you know, 2 weeks ago, and then a week ago I did my quarterly STD test and screening.
Yeah. Yeah, and it works out great. And then for the interim, we have a local urgent clinic or minute clinic that they are very LGBT friendly. They are very sensitive to, like, because some of them knew me prior to my surgery, and then afterwards they're like, okay, what pronouns do we swipe? Do we pee in a cup? Which is great now. I don't have to pee in a cup, which it's a whole mess in itself anyway. So I'm like, I don't have to do that.
So actually that now raises practical questions about like how the screening works. So like, do you just not do any screening for your front hole, for your front?
So for the front, we've tried pee in a cup and swabs. We found most effective, like, I tell them, like, hey, there was a possible exposure. Let's try to pee in a cup. Mm-hmm. But since there's no really any front genitalia anymore, it can get tricky. But we still do the normal, the butt swabs, the throat swabs, things like that, blood work. But it really depends on what has happened up front, is if I do front screening or not, because swabs just don't work and it's very painful, because you're literally, think of, for you guys, taking the Q-tip and going in the front of your penis. So peeing the cup still works about half the time. So
talking about your front stuff has brought up the question in my mind. Have you had any experience with sounding in the past, either before the surgery or post the surgery? Is sounding a kink that interests you at all? And if so, like, how does that work now versus how it did before?
Yeah, so I tried sounding with and without chastity prior to surgery. It went okay. Not my most fun thing in the world. It was one of those like, hey, I seen this, and I'm very much a person like, even if I have an inkling I may like it, I'm going to try it. I had a friend that was very much into sounding. He had all the equipment, and we kind of walked through it, and that way ended up not liking it. Just, it was a weird feeling. And it was starting to trigger things with my body dysmorphia. And then post-surgery, when I was talking to the surgeon and my doctor post-op, I'm like, hey, does this even work? And they're like, we highly recommend not to do it, just because they had to do a urethral reroute so I can sit to pee. Mm-hmm. And it's a much more straight line into my bladder. yeah, it's just the sounding. I tried it, just didn't really, wasn't the thing for me, I should say.
I've been there. I've tried sounding. I was like, this, in theory, this should be very hot. And in practice, yeah. I was like, eh, no.
Yeah, and when I tried sounding, I tried even prior to, I should say, prior to my knowledge of not to use these, the urethral chastity cage ones.
Oh, I've tried those as well. Those are terrible.
Yeah, and then I realized, like, hey, I should probably not use these because that little metal piece can come off the tube, and I didn't want to deal with that.
It's one of those things that, like, you always think, like, oh, this is going to be, like, really hot and really easy to, like, have my penis plugged while it's in a cage, and on top of that, some of them, it's like, oh, it's this hollow tube that I'll pee through, it'll make peeing so much easier.
Yeah.
And one, no, it doesn't work. And yeah. Two, it doesn't make peeing easier. There's like still like splattered residue everywhere. And it's like, it's a disaster every way you look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The question that I wanted to ask earlier that had slipped my mind was, so cute Chi-Town boy is your handler. Mm-hmm. What other roles does he play? Is he also your master, your dom, your boyfriend? What roles and dynamics does it play?
Yeah, so effectively what I call him is my handler and pussy trainer. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, we are pretty much best friends. We're really good friends. He's our pack handler. I'm part of a puppy pack with another pup. Cute Chi-Town's boyfriend is his actual platonic primary relationship, and then we have like two other individuals that are kind of in our friends group, our puppy pack, as we call it. We call ourselves the hand puppets on our Telegram group.
Oh, that's cute.
That is cute. Wait.
You said his boyfriend's his primary platonic or romantic?
Romantic. I'm sorry. Yeah, romantic. Yeah. Is his primary
possibly romantic. Also platonic too, but
yeah. Romantic. I misspoke. Romantic. Yeah. His primary romantic, and then right. More of his puppy role. He's also a pup as well. And then just really good best friends. We text and chat pretty much every day of the week, and things like that.
And do you date outside of your pack, or do you have romantic relation? Are you pursuing romance outside of your pack?
I am trying to pursue a romantic relationship, but dating is somewhat difficult here in Connecticut. It's a very small LGBT community to begin with. So also trying to find someone that is also kinky and also open to open relationships is, we're navigating it the best we can at the moment. So hopefully more to come shortly.
Right. Well, good luck and good to know.
So thank you so much for all of this amazing insight, Pup Kibbles, on the Nolo community, on your body journey as first a pup and then a locked pup and then now a Nolo pup. But prior to this talk, I actually had all of these sensationalized beliefs about the Nolo community. And I have to admit, they were a little bit more, I thought the reasoning was more extreme, a little bit more metal, something punk counterculture. But it sounds more like a story of body autonomy, personal choice, and empowerment. We have a couple of questions we like to ask our guests. So it's three small questions. First one is, what's new and exciting and hot for you right now?
I would say what's new, hot, and exciting right now is my eagerness, again, for people listening several months from now. I'm on my way to FistFest in Augusta, Georgia, and really getting back into the fisting community just to wreck my hole and then start posting up at hotels for some cum-dump sessions. So,
ooh, very hot. Fortunately, FistFest is 3 times a year. So yes. No matter when we release this episode, FistFest will be coming up shortly.
Exactly. April, July, and October.
Second question is, what is something hot that you would like to get into more?
Honestly, it's kind of related to my first one, is posting up for cum dump sessions. That's something I've really starting to really explore post-surgeries, and I really would like to get into it more.
Is it anon and no loads refused sort of energy?
Yes, very much so.
Wow. And the last question is, what is something you'd like to see more of?
I think just a more better community, not pushing out the outliers in the community, the groups or people in the community, in the general kink community, not getting felt like they're pushed out just because they have a different body, different preference, different interests or needs within the community, and also accepting of individuals that have a wide variety of kinks and not something that like this is the only thing they do. I know for like myself, I'm in everything from ADBL to cum dump sessions and everything in between. So being more inclusive of those individuals that like a wide variety of things, just because they don't like what you do, doesn't mean you have to push them out and things like that. So
no, my kinks are the only acceptable kinks. Everything else is weird.
Yeah. We're all a little bit weird in our own ways. So.
Well, Pup Kibbles, thank you so much for talking with us today. This has been enlightening. It's been a lot of fun. And I hope you have a good fist fest.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Great.
For our listeners who want to possibly ask questions, because I'm sure they will, where can they reach you?
So I'm Pup Kibbles on all social medias. Recon, Twitter is my main one. Aspig, FetLife, Telegram. I kind of have the Pup Kibbles on all of them just in case. So pretty accessible, and if anybody has any questions, again, just feel free to reach out. I'm more than happy to help.
All right. Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks
so much. Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye.
This is Chastity Pod, a passion project brought to you by two chastity enthusiasts. I'm Locked Fist Monster.
And I'm Deny Dumpling. And you're listening to The Sweet Sound of Chastity by Boys Noise and Pussy Riot featuring Alice Glass.
If you like our content and want to stay connected, follow us at Chastity Pod on Twitter.
That's at ChastityPod on Twitter. We'll see you there. Я скажу на место, просто тупо месседж, а теперь навечно я твое господь.